Comics.
Movies.
Music.
Video games.
Technology.
Blu-ray.
Television.
This is the HHW LOD Podcast Network.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com.
Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast.
Over 150,000 titles to choose from for your Android, iPhone, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Hello, this is Guillermo del Toro, and you're listening to Out Now Podcast. Hello.
Wait a minute, I forgot my introduction.
We are now recording, and this is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, and Abe is unfortunately not here. I believe he is sick, and I hope he gets better. Ideally, when this podcast is out, he'll be like, why was it not on this podcast? But, you know, for the time being, that's how things are. So, with that in mind, Out Now is a film podcast with Abe and I discussing new movies weekly. However, every now and then we like to do these special bonus episodes, whether it's one of our fun commentaries or just because we want to do something different. And because this week did not offer the kind of the most ripe, I guess is a fun way to say it, the most ripe of new releases, we decided, why not do one of our fun news shows? And Abe and I did plan to do a news show, but he's sick now. But that's okay, because with me today to discuss various news items throughout the week, there's been a lot of things that happened in movie news and whatnot, so we can get to them. I have, from veryaware.com, it is Peter Paris.
Hello, hello. Actually, it's Peter Paris.
Paris?
Yeah, like France. I know it's spelled weird, but I don't think I've ever told you that.
Giving it an accent. I like saying Peter Paris. I might do it anyway. You can tell me however you want to say it.
Oh, that's
say
true.
It the other way.
yes, happy to be here. Thank you for asking me on.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. So with that said, we're just going to kind of get things rolling, do a little show notes stuff here first. iTunes reviews and ratings, good to get those. It helps out our show, helps other people find our show. Of course, love doing regular shows about, you know, the new movies of the week, but we do these fun shows, too, and there's lots of different variety of shows that we have, including a new commentary, actually. We just put out our commentary for Taken. Abe and I were joined by Brandon Peters and Jordan Grout to talk about the film Taken with Liam Neeson, the original Taken, which was also kind of a de facto review of Taken 3 during that commentary. And we know you guys love the commentaries, and we've been promising to do a new one for a while, and we finally got it out there. So you can find that on iTunes along with all the other episodes of our show. And if you'd be so kind, it'd be great if you guys could just give us an iTunes review and a rating. It'd be very simple. So, with that said, let's move on. Let's get to Out Now Quickies. This is where we discuss some of the other movies that might have come out during the week. There's not many other movies that came out this week, which is why we're not doing a main movie of the week. But with that said, Peter, have you seen any other movies recently this week?
This week, no.
You just told me about one that you saw.
Oh, well, I saw Theory of Everything, but that's like does that count?
Yes, you just saw it. What'd you think of it?
Oh, well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, like, I thought it was pretty, you know, it's one
the
of those.
The listeners want to know.
Wait, what?
The listeners want to know.
Well, no. I had heard, and when I saw the trailer, it's one of those Oscar bait kind of movies where you feel like you've seen it before you've seen it. He's great. Is it Eddie Redmayne?
Yeah, Eddie Redmayne, yeah.
Ed Raymond, he's great, and so
like a lion with a red mane.
Tones. Also, you know, I'd say the most surprising thing about the Theory of Everything is that, and I don't know if you would agree, it's actually, even though he's great as Stephen Hawking, as a narrative, it's actually her story, Jane, which I thought I didn't know that going in, and I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. It's really more about her journey.
It's based on her book and everything.
Oh, I didn't know. Oh, okay, so. So, Whiplash, Boyhood.
Because I actually ranked this the other day. I put a tweet out of my rankings of the the Oscar noms.
Well, I'm assuming Whiplash is your favorite, or Boyhood?
No, Boyhood's my favorite. I'm saying
Boyhood's your favorite. Then you've got...
It's Boyhood, Birdman, and then Selma. And then what's the... So, fourth would be...
Then Whiplash?
Fourth would be Whiplash, yeah, because then there's...
So then, okay, so that's your top...
Oh, wait, there's seven. Wait, I have seven in my hand.
There's
what
eight.
I, which one am I missing?
Right, so you're missing one. So what is the... what are we forgetting? So it's not Foxcatcher.
There, oh yeah, because that's not nominated.
Carell's nominated.
Well, but everything else, it's everything except the Best Picture of the Year. That's what the Academy apparently decided.
Right. Yeah. Right. wait, what is it? So it's Selma.
Grand Budapest. There we go.
Oh my God! And so those are movies where I'm like, I'm sure I like them, but I don't know exactly where I would place them. They're both really good. Like, but sometimes I feel that way where I'm like, well, I haven't really had a chance to revisit. So. But same thing with, but you know, that's weird. Birdman, though, even though I only saw it once, I'm pretty confident that Birdman would be pretty high. like just because of the way it's made and all that kind of stuff. I really like that. So
yeah.
But yeah. So no, y'all. I saw Theory of Everything.
Oh, that's what we were talking about. I was like, how do we get to?
Yeah, I saw Theory of Everything, but I keep feeling like. Oh, well, you know, actually, technically, if you wanted to, unless you've already talked about your last one, I mean, the big movie that opened this weekend was Project Almanac, that's which I've big, seen.
Yeah, that's my seen? Quickie, too. Yeah, I've seen it. I saw it this week.
What'd you think?
I think it's okay. I think it's like it's fine for what it is. I mean, I know, like, it's basically getting, like, the, you know, whatever great time travel movie crossed with Project X is kind of the log line that critics have been using. What I like is that I like the people in this movie for the most part, as opposed to something like Project X, where I hated every one of those characters. So if you have a found footage movie such as this, you want to have a likable cast. And they have that. It falls into giant cliches. You have like the, you know, you got the stock lead character who's not all that interesting, but he's smart, so you're supposed to follow along with him. And you got his nerdy best friend. And then you got the fat friend that's kind of funny. And then you get the girl characters. And so you have the sister who starts out like as somewhat interesting and then proceeds to be completely one-dimensional, which is, you know, that sucks. For the most part, like they do a fine job of making them have chemistry, and most of this cast has chemistry, so that's you know, that's what helps overall. But I mean, that's just, you know, the basic look at the casting of the movie. Then you have, you know, everything that happens. And I feel like in the second act, once they get the time travel going, it's like happening. We need to course correct everything. And it's like, if you don't think about it too hard, it's engaging enough, but at the same time, it's like, I'm not ever gonna see this again or anything. So I think it's fine. That's where I end up.
I think I would mostly agree with you. I think I was surprised at how much fun I had in the middle act, which I would agree with you. It's because so many found footage movies, notorious. This group, I was like, oh, I kind of like these people. And it's fun that they're going to. No, it wasn't Coachella. Oh, they're at Lollapalooza and everything. I think the problem I have with the last act, besides being a cliche, is that it kind of does this. It feels like, even when you've seen the trailer, actually even before the trailer, even when we had heard that the movie was being made, that Soderbergh was doing this movie about male strippers, it felt like this movie where we're all in on this joke. That it's kind of fun. In this kind of, you know, kind of like a showgirl's way to watch this movie about male strippers, and it's over the top and it's silly, but it's fun. And for the first half of Magic Mike, that's what it is. Suddenly, it almost feels like the movie is kind of shaming the audience. Like, you're like, how dare you have fun with these people's lives are terrible. And you're like, that's not what I signed up for. Like, in Project Almanac, I feel like the joy of their musing time travel is of course that they're teenagers. Of course they would do a concert. Of course they would like try to get a better grade in class. Like, so suddenly when it becomes like, well, now what you've done is the butterfly and it affects and it's killed people. It's just like, what? Like, it, that to me is where the last act, not only feeling cliche as a narrative, but it feels again like kind of shaming us, like, oh, this is terrible. There, don't you see this is bad to do time travel? And I'm like,
I don't think that the shift in tone is that jarring. It just doesn't really do anything with it that feels all that new. It's especially when you have a scene. Well, there's two scenes. There's a scene where like they have, for one thing, they call out like several other time travel movies. So like in the world that this movie exists in, all these time travel movies exist already.
Right.
And then you have a scene where like they have like a stack of Blu-rays that are all the time travel movies and they're studying them, and yet they still like they just can't seem to figure out like all they seemingly have the knowledge of all the rules of every time travel movie as if nothing could ever go wrong, yet they seem to break every single one of those rules, which is like, why even acknowledge the fact that there are other time travel movies that exist if you're just not even going to be consistent with that fact?
Wait, so are you saying you wish it was more a la Scream? Is that what you're saying?
No, well, actually that would be interesting if they actually called out to that fact, but more of, we're like in the if you're going to call out Magic Mike as a reference, I'm going to call out Walking Dead, which also has nothing to do with this movie. But in terms of that, zombie movies don't seem to exist in that universe. Like, they've never heard of the term zombie before in the Walking Dead universe. So if this movie was like in that vein where time travel movies never exist, then there'd be less of me to focus in on. But given that the movie wants to let us know that these kids understand that these time travel movies exist, it's hard for me to accept that they would also break the exact same rules that all these time travel movies break.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
What I'm saying? that. Yeah, I get you. And you know, there's also a giant chalkboard scene where they're in this basement with their father's basement where they find the time travel device. They're in that basement the whole time. I don't think I've ever saw that chalkboard, but suddenly when everything goes bad, there's a giant chalkboard available for them to diagram out exactly what's going on, a la Back to the Future 2. So it's like, what?
Well, I think it's interesting that, like, and maybe this is because you and I are not teenagers, but like, I don't know. I was just thinking about, okay, and actually another thing I did this week is I went to I don't know how often they have these, but like, I usually don't get invited. But I got Universal invited me to a Blu-ray release party for their movie Ouija,
which I did go to.
Wait, were you there?
I was there.
Wait, you were at the Ouija thing?
Yeah.
Wait, how did I miss you?
I left early.
Oh, okay. Well, I can see that. And did you and I go to the screening together? We did, right?
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
And now that Ouija, while not a found footage movie. That movie is kind of has kind of the problem that Project Almanac kind of avoids, which is I don't really like any character in Ouija. Yeah. Like, I mean, I am fine with Ouija being a silly horror board game movie, but I wish the characters were more likable and fun. Like, really, if those characters were likable and fun, kind of the way they are in Project Almanac, I think you, me, and Jeff, I think we all would have been like, well, it's a silly movie, but it was fun.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is a much better example. Cabin in the Woods, which is way cleverer and has all the things going for it. But regardless of that, the characters in that movie, they're not the most interesting characters, but they're fun. They're good. They're fun characters to be around. And like they have good chemistry together. And you can see that. That reflects very well.
Right. I agree. But I guess I was just, yeah. I mean, do you think that
it's a loose example? But yeah. I mean, yeah.
I mean, do you think, well, actually, the example I would have used, because this is what Ouija reminded me of, was, and it's not like these are the deepest films, but I thought that Ouija was trying to be basically using the Ouija board, meaning a villain that you can't, that really doesn't have a form,
yeah.
Kind of the same way the Final Destination movies are.
Fair.
But I actually enjoy the Final Destination movies. I think those are good, fun B movies, you know, like, and Ouija, I was like, it feels so generic and like, I don't really care. I mean, did you like Ouija? I don't think you did.
No, it missed my top 10 worst because Annabelle exists. That's why. But
oh, I didn't think it was that bad. I just thought it was like a C. So you thought it was really bad.
Yeah, but I think movies like that bother me because they make tons of money, and it's like you see all these other, you know, much smaller horror movies that don't even make it to theaters. They have to go to VOD. That are, you know, look at The Babadook. I mean, The Babadook's a fantastic movie.
Oh,
of course. You know who saw that? About four of us. Like, I mean, it's sad. And that movie, you know, it's going to get the critical love and the cult love, and, you know, in 30 years, people will be like, Babadook's amazing. Right now, though, not many people know about it. Ouija, on the other hand, no one cares about Ouija, but at the same time, people are like, you know what? There's a horror movie out. Let's go see it. So it makes $30 million at the box office, and then you're going to get a sequel to Ouija. You're going to get Ouija 2, still bored. And like, I just like, why?
Yeah, because I was going to say, I don't know anybody, because you're right. Ouija made Ouija because of marketing and, you know, because of the brand, because of it as a brand.
Yeah.
It was number one for 2 weeks, but I don't know if anybody really likes that movie. Like,
yeah.
That's not anybody's favorite film or anything. I mean, actually, wait, speaking of horror, and I did not see this, but it might be out. Did you see It Follows?
No, I know about it, but I have not seen it yet.
Because isn't that another about teenagers, and it's kind of got a hook of a horror? I've heard mixed. Jeff didn't like it, but
I'm Jeff Nelson, friend of the show. I honestly just haven't looked too much into it, just because movies like that, I'm like, I'd rather be surprised, so I don't try to go too far.
No, me too.
But I've heard things where, like, I think I'd probably be interested in this, so we'll see.
So, but yeah, I'd say that's about my current. I mean, there's not a lot out. Right?
Getting way back to Project Almanac, by the way. The other thing that it's a distance from other, you know, more accomplished found footage movies, like Chronicle, I think, is the key example here. I think Chronicle's a much better movie.
Yes.
And I think not only because of just what it's doing and what it's about or whatnot, but I think it does a good job of kind of handling the found footage aspect, where it gives you an actual reason for it to be found footage, where there's this kind of this god complex that Dane DeHaan's character forms, which makes it interesting to see how they utilize the camera for that reason. Whereas this movie is just like, we're filming because why not, I guess.
Well,
and then we edited it and somebody put it all together and added slow motion and scored some scenes. So,
well, like, I mean, technically, are you saying Project Almanac could have been a straight more traditionally shot movie.
No, because then I think it already becomes less interesting if you do that. Like, it was already, I think that's why they chose to do that to begin
with. Right, because I was like, I mean, like, part of the hook is that the character sees himself from an old video thing. So I'm kind of like, well, you at least need that portion to be that. So,
It's because I don't even view it as a. At this point, I'm kind of past the whole why are they still filming thing, because at this point it's like an aesthetic. It's like watching episodes of like Parks and Recreation or Modern Family where they're done in this documentary style and they have little interviews, but that's not real. Like, they're never going to address that. Like, it's not part of the thing anymore. Like, it's just like that's the style that has chosen to do the format in.
I agree,
to enhance the comedy in those shows.
No,
and,
I would agree.
And this, you know, this is just like it's enhancing the reality of friends that have chemistry being together in order to accomplish what it's called.
But you're right, though. I thought that in Chronicle, when he becomes so powerful that there's that scene where
he takes like all the cell phones and everything.
Yeah, all this, that was really pretty cool. And actually, even earlier when he's like, oh, I basically can have the camera follow us because I can control that. I was like, wow. It's like now they've introduced that there could be like a dolly shot. That's like that was really good.
It has a lot of clever things.
Is that the guy who did Chronicle? His Fantastic Four trailer just hit, right?
Yes, which is a great way to segue into the news that we're going to talk about this week. So that was at No Quickies, TM, and we're going to wrap that up. We're going to go right into the news segment. So yeah, lots of film news, lots of new stuff came out this week, and yeah, let's drive right into that. We had the debut of the Fantastic Four trailer, which is from director Josh Trank, who directed Chronicle, and this film stars Whiplash's Miles Teller, Fruitvale Station's Michael B. Jordan, Billy Elliot's Jamie Bell, and House of Cards' Kate Mara, and Dawn of the Planet of the Apes' Toby Kebbell as unseen Doctor Doom character. This is a movie that's, I guess, it's obviously rebooting the Fantastic Four film series. It's, you know, a whole new cast. It's taking, from what I understand, the Ultimate Universe of Fantastic Four, not the traditional, you know, one that most people seem to know because everyone this week became a Fantastic Four expert. It's funny how that happens when you suddenly, you know, don't approve of something that you're an expert in the topic. With all that in mind, before we just dive straight into it, Peter, what do you think of the trailer as a, you know?
Oh, I mean, I liked it, but I do not know that much about the Fantastic Four, but I do remember the two mediocre mid-2000s movies with Jessica Alba and Michael Chiklis and everything. So I thought, yeah, I mean, it's clearly going for a kind of I know some people are calling it like Chris Nolan. It's clearly going for this like,
well,
this,
you know, it's darker and grittier. That's yeah, the same I mean, thing to say. Like, I don't necessarily believe like, in it, but I mean, that's
kind of like Man of Steel too. I think someone said that like Man of Steel in many ways is less a Superman movie and more about, it's more just a science fiction movie and the guy just happens to be Superman. I kind of see the comparison with Fantastic Four where it's like it actually feels like a sci-fi thriller more than like a normal. But actually I'm fine with that. Yeah, I thought it looked good. I was pretty impressed.
I like the I mean it's fine. Like I feel like it doesn't show me nearly enough to be able to judge this movie really harshly. I would say beforehand. I had nothing against the idea of what they're doing. I like these people for the most part. I'm not the biggest Kate Mara fan, but I like this cast. I like Josh Trank, and it's like I don't know why I'm supposed to not like what the choices are here. We have this cool cast. We have in the midst of all these superhero movies, I'm not sure why Fantastic Four is the one where it's like, we should hate this automatically because those other movies were apparently so good. Like, I don't know where that line. And that's what I see this week, too. It's like, why did they have to change the cast? Like, you guys didn't like this movie the first time. Like, what? But looking at one of the interesting things I saw about this trailer is someone like mashed it up with Interstellar, the initial Interstellar teaser. And it's pretty dead on. Like it pretty much matches up perfectly with
the first trailer.
I'll put a link in the show notes to that. But it's pretty cool. But that said, that seems like if there's any Nolan comparison, that's the one I see right now. Just given because someone's able to match that trailer up because it fits quite appropriately. But yeah, it's vague. There's some ominous things going on. It doesn't give you too much to work with beyond like a quick shot of someone on fire, some rocks to show you the thing, and that something happened to people. But that's all you really get. And I guess there's an argument being made that it seems like it's being too self-important. But, I mean, in a superhero world where the world seems to constantly be, in threat, of course it needs to be self-important. It's like they're trying to, you know, stop some horrible thing from happening or what have you. And with that in mind, it's like, yeah, all right, there's another one. Let's see it. Let's see the whole thing.
Well, I was talking to a guy who is a – that I mean, I actually – just met him this week, but he seems to be a kind of Fantastic Four fan and aficionado. Uh-huh. And the problems he was having, and maybe this has already come up online, was like, from what he heard, the Thing can change. So the Thing basically is like the Hulk now. Because as I recall, the Thing is always just the Thing. That's kind of what's sad, is that like he's never like Bruce Banner, yeah. Right? The other thing is that what is the character? Is it Johnny Storm?
Johnny Storm, yeah.
Johnny Storm used to be the youngest one. So that's which why he was the like he's the impetuous teenager. Oh, sorry. There's a motorcycle driving by. So Johnny Storm used to be the youngest one, and I heard now he's the oldest one. Is that true?
Honestly, in terms of like what's going on with the actual story and whatnot, I've just stayed out of it.
Right.
I feel like Jamie Bell's probably the oldest actor among them, if I had to guess.
Oh, right. Okay. Those were the weird changes that I was hearing that this guy was complaining about. That he was just like, why would you make the Human Torch? Why would he be the wizened character? And why would the Thing be able to change? And the Invisible Girl isn't really as invisible anymore. And like, I have not seen this, so this is just, maybe speculation. Oh, and then I also heard that they aren't really, at least in the first movie, they're never really going to get their costumes with the Four. They have outfits that have four like etch marks, like a 1, 2, 3, but it's not the actual number 4. Actually, I kind of like that.
I kind of like that too. But
I was like, oh, that's kind of cool.
The kind of things I've been reading is just more of like, kind of official stuff and things that like Josh Trank and Fox have wanted people to know beforehand. Stuff like, Trank wants to make it more realistic and wants to kind of ground it in a certain level of reality. I have no problem with that. And as far as kind of changes to the comic, I mean, there are purists out there. I'm glad you guys want, to have the exact representation of a thing that you read once or whatnot. But there's been plenty of superhero movies that have done, their own thing and have been good because of that thing. And I'd rather just see a good movie than one that, uses the, the comic inspiration as, as gospel, as, the best, possibly the only way to represent something. And I think a movie like Watchmen ran into that problem where it was just too faithful, where some other movies, have some more leniency. I mean, Iron Man is not the most faithful movie in the world in terms of, like, the Iron Man lore, but the changes it made, apply. Spider-Man's a perfect example of that, too. Spider-Man didn't make, the record-breaking money that it did because people didn't like the changes it made. Like, would I have liked to see homemade web shooters in the first Spider-Man? Sure. Did I get them in Amazing Spider-Man? Yeah. Was that movie better than the first Spider-Man? No. So, I mean, where are we going?
That's true. I'll say this. This is a bigger rant that I could go on, but in short, I think the thing that's always been weird for me is that with my limited experience as a person in probably like high school, college, or whatever, who kind of dabbled in superhero comics. Because I want to say I do like I like The Walking Dead, I like Fables. There are a lot of other things that are like graphic novel-y superheroes that I like. Mm-hmm. But if we're just talking superheroes, I remember, I think it was in the 80s or 90s, like Marvel created a new Spider-Man series, and it was Web of Spider-Man. So there's like Spectacular Spider-Man, Web of Spider-Man, The Amazing Spider-Man. I think that's the oldest. And it's always kind of a given that new writers come on board. Sometimes they reboot the series within the same series. Sometimes they make a new one, like Web of Spider-Man. But it's kind of understood that if you're a comic book fan, that the writers are kind of allowed to take what they think is the essence of the hero and make changes. So it's always been weird to me that when these things are made into these huge movies, that those same fans that have been used to reading comics where things get changed. I mean, The Dark Knight, Frank Miller, is it The Dark Knight Returns? Is that what it's called?
Yes, yeah.
That is not at all like Bob Kane's like Batman from like 50s or whatever. Like, so I don't really understand where. I think it's a mistrust of Hollywood, maybe, because I'm like, technically, you're used to reading these things where things are changed all the time.
It's like a mistrust combined with like short-term memory.
It's only
when you see like one little thing that suddenly becomes a huge issue, but when you love like everything else becoming beforehand, Like, it's not like Avengers was the summation of every, like, famous comic book arc ever that was completely accurate to every single Marvel comic book story that led into that movie. But you know what? It's a really good movie, and that's what counts there. And I guess the deeper question is, what's better? The movie that's entirely faithful to something that you read once, or, you know, whenever, however many times, but you read and you thought this would be great, or, like, you know, a good movie. and it's, that seems to be the challenge that's constantly faced whenever, you know, an adaptation of, especially, you know, of this kind of scale, of these kind of scales come out.
Yeah. And you know, so do you think in a weird way, and I'm sure there is a small vocal audience, on the web, but do you think that's why Guardians of the Galaxy did, well, not only because it's a really good, it's a good, fun movie, but do you think that that's why it was also really well kind of, like, loved? Because I had never heard of Guardians of the Galaxy. I'm sure someone had.
I think that's what puts movies like Guardians and, frankly, most of these Marvel movies into this kind of good graces of a lot of people, because they're more obscure properties. Iron Man, you know, as much as people like him now, it's not like he was, you know, it's not like people were flinging Iron Man books off the rack before there was an Iron Man
movie. No, Iron Man was never near as big as Spider-Man or Superman or anything.
That's the top of all of these. Like, Iron Man was probably bigger than Captain America and Thor before there were movies about them. But they're all, you know, technically second-tier characters, to put it that way. And so Guardians is, you know, no one knows about this thing. All they have to market just you know, everything they can, and they did, and it was successful. And I think it's more of people trusting the brand of Marvel and, you know, looking at this cast that's huge and looking at these visuals, which look bright and poppy and colorful, and hearing the tone of the film and everything, and that's what led to its success. I would be curious about that small percentage. It's like, I don't know, guys. The comics are like this, but this is like this. I'd be curious what that audience has to say. But I really haven't heard about that very much. And I've heard about it with others, you know, with Hulk and Captain America.
And it's weird. And it's weird, too, because, again, you're right. It is kind of a selective memory thing, because I don't think a lot of comic book fans really liked those mid-2000s Fantastic Four movies. They were very junky and, like, yeah, I don't think anybody really liked those. So, I don't know.
One that, like, doesn't necessarily support those Fantastic Four movies, but I think they're fun enough. I feel like I have issues with Jessica Alba's Mrs. Fantastic, but there's, like, the general tone they're going for felt appropriate. And I'd rather see a movie that, you know, goes in a different direction because we've seen this movie already, rather than trying to recreate the same thing again.
Well, I think it also, and it's interesting too, because, like, you know, comic book fans or sci-fi, whatever, fans for so long, you know, rightly so, like, always felt that a lot of the things that they liked that could be darker were, like, trivialized and made kind of light. And so now, you know, we get the era of, you know, the Dark Knight and also to a degree, the Lord of the Rings, you know, which really took something very seriously for fantasy. And I think fans really appreciated that. But now with Marvel has made having a lighter tone actually work. You know, it's like, it is funny, but, like, it's still a really big budget and it's good actors. So it is a weird, I guess maybe that's where the Fantastic Four thing lies, where it's just like, well, where does that play? Because traditionally, the Fantastic Four is a lighter series, but you're right. This trailer does make it look a little darker and everything. So, but I don't know.
I mean, look at the Avengers trailers. They're not full of jokes. They're full of, like, epicness and deep scores.
That's
and whatnot.
True. But
they're not selling it. But you ideally should know it's going to be a fun movie.
Exactly, because I'm like, that's true. That's just showing that the stakes are raised and everything. But we already all have knowledge of how much fun it is to see, you know,
the banter
with all these actors. So, like, we know that'll be there. So I think that's why it's okay.
It is Marvel, and there's, you know, you can try. I mean, people trust in that at this point.
It's interesting, and I don't know if this would move to another news thing, but, like, it's interesting because, like, I've been a big fan of Chris Pratt and his kind of humor, you know, since Parks and Recreation. He's terrific. And I thought he was really good as Star-Lord. And I was a little disappointed when I saw, just from what we saw, in the teaser for Jurassic World, because unless Chris Pratt is doing a joke, like, you know how – do you watch Parks and Recreation?
Yes, I do.
You know how he's got that character? I don't know. Is it
Johnny Karate?
Or yeah.
Burt Macklin, FBI?
Wait, what's the FBI?
Burt Macklin, FBI.
Right. Unless secretly Chris Pratt is actually doing a Burt Macklin impression of Jurassic World where it's like he takes things seriously, but like it's kind of funny. I'm not sure if they're utilizing Chris Pratt well.
Here's the thing with that. I mean, that's just a teaser. And the teaser doesn't end with like the full pumping Jurassic Park score. It has this kind of piano, very slight score with this hints of darkness. So I don't know how clashing that with Chris Pratt's inherent sense of humor would really make for an effective trailer. I have no doubt that there's going to be fun in a movie called Jurassic World where a giant dinosaur jumps out of the water and eats a shark. Like that. Like there's no way for that movie to not like have fun with itself. And I feel
that's true.
And it's not like they cast Chris Pratt because we needed someone serious.
But but I would say that another thing, like the Fantastic Four thing, I mean, we could almost argue that, it could be most of the news we're talking about, but like pretty much, Ghostbusters, Indiana Jones, possibly with Chris Pratt, Fantastic Four trailer. These all seem to be things where that news has come out or there's a trailer or all we have is information or all we have is a cast list. And there's all this like controversy of like, well, that sounds terrible or whatever.
That's the thing. Like, it's not controversy. It's the world we live in where everyone has a voice. And obviously we're doing that too because we're on a podcast about it.
Yes.
But everyone has something to say. But we have an opportunity to talk about these things, which is what I do.
I know that because I have a friend of mine who's a huge Indiana Jones fan. And he feels very much that Indiana Jones is not James Bond. And you don't recast Harrison Ford or Indiana Jones. And I've never been a huge – like I love Raiders, but I don't really care about the rest of them. And so I was kind of like, I was like, you know what? Chris Pratt's pretty funny. Like, and in a way, he's almost like a better version of Brendan Fraser, which is what, I mean, kind of Brendan Fraser's role in The Mummy. That's kind of what he was doing. He was kind of doing another like, so I was kind of like, I was like, that's not a bad idea. Like, I could see him as Indiana Jones. But my friend was like, oh, please, he's no Harrison Ford. And I was like, well, that's true. He's not Harrison Ford.
Well, that's the funny thing, too. I mean, Chris Pratt's already made he's made a big success out of playing Han Solo in Guardians of the Galaxy, and potentially going to be a big success playing Indiana Jones. They've made him into Harrison Ford.
That's true. Right.
So look forward to those years, 40 years later when Chris Pratt's old and grumpy, I guess is what to say too.
It's funny because to me, Harrison Ford is more of a classic kind of leading man. It's like, he's handsome, he's rugged, and he has bouts of humor where he can be kind of sarcastic, but it's kind of a grumpy – even when he's younger, because I'm not even talking about the old Harrison Ford. Even when he's Han Solo, it's kind of – it is kind of a grumpiness. Chris Pratt's thing is more that he has this spontaneity that he like thinks of these things that we haven't thought of, and it's just kind of ridiculous.
I can agree.
That is very much in tune with the kind of comedians we like right now. So I think it makes sense.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I feel like it applies to the generation that we're in. But at the same time, both him and Harrison Ford and Brendan Fraser and a few others, they're actors that can kind of laugh at themselves. And that's why they can do certain things and an audience will get behind them. They can do not just stunts, but, pratfalls, Chris Pratt, and make jokes and have one-liners and things and be able to make fun of themselves. And not many people can do that as a leading man. When you want to take themselves, when are you going to see Christian Bale like run over and like fall down and like say, "Oh, that was weird," and like get back up? Like that's not what he does. That's not the kind of person he is. But Chris Pratt, he's really been able to fit himself into that kind of position,
right? But
we're moving on, by the way, from the Fantastic Four trailer. We're well into Chris Pratt territory now, which was another one of our topics. And yeah, him as Indiana Jones. Speaking to that, I agree with your friend where I don't think it's a character you can just recast. At the same time, we're in a world where you have to bring up the brand. You can't just create a new property because only so many of those are successful. And you run it crunching the numbers. I see why this makes sense. But my issue with it is that it's very boring. It's like, of course you'd cast Chris Pratt as Indiana Jones. And because I have to say of course, that means it's a boring choice to me. I'd rather see something outside of the box that I haven't seen before.
You mean like...
I don't know. If not the best example, just randomly pulling a name because we already mentioned it. Michael B. Jordan's Indiana Jones. That'd be like, I'd be like, what? I'm intrigued. I'm seeing that movie. I have no idea what to expect from that.
No, that's interesting. No, okay, well, I mean, you're right. That would be.
You say Chris Pratt, Jones, I know exactly what that performance looks like.
I would agree with you, and I would I would agree, and I think that'd be pretty good. But you know what? You know what's interesting to me is that I'll be very curious to see. And actually, I mean, unless there's some, you know, Fox News rant or something that I haven't heard, but I have been happy that we are getting to a point where it doesn't seem like maybe it's because they're older, maybe it's because they're a different type of performer, but it doesn't feel like I don't think anybody's complaining about Michael B. Jordan being Johnny Storm.
No, they were.
Wait, oh, was I saying because he's black? Do you think they were?
Oh yeah, no, they were. When it was first announced, that was out there. I was seeing
because I got to say I'm pretty confident that if Idris Elba ends up being the next James Bond, which everybody seems to be talking about, I'm pretty confident everyone's going to be pretty happy. Like I, but we know it's really weird though. I wouldn't say that.
Not Rush Limbaugh, Elba, of course.
Wait, what?
Not Rush Limbaugh, but everybody else.
Well, no, I know, but I mean, like fans of the. But what's weird is that I don't think that it's weird when you say Michael B. Jordan is Indiana Jones. That seems interesting and kind of weird. I'm kind of like, well, I don't know what that would be like because what the way he acts, like when you talk, if it was Idris Elba as James Bond, that honestly, except for the fact that he's like he is a black British actor. Well, is he British? He's British, right?
He's British, yes.
But like honestly, that really doesn't. That seems kind of a no brainer because it's like he's suave, he's very confident. I was like, yeah, he pretty much seems like he'd be James Bond. It's like that's not really. Like, I mean, it doesn't really surprise me, but I'd be very excited because I really like him.
See, my issue with that is, like, what I like about James Bond roles is that they're some exceptions. I mean, like, Pierce Brosnan was Remington Steele, but, like, I don't have much to attach to most of the actors that played James Bond beforehand. Like, Sean Connery, I know him as James Bond. Like, I don't know him as anything else besides Sean Connery before Sean Connery. It's not like I was, alive then, but, I mean, you know what I'm saying. And even, like, Roger Moore, he was the saint. But at the same time, it's like I can distinguish it. Idris Elba, it's like he's already been so many things. He's been Stringer Bell on The Wire. He's been Luther. He's Heimdall. And Thor. Like, it seems like he has so many, all these properties and various characters that are very synonymous with his name at this point already, where it's like, does he need to be James Bond too? Like, I don't know if that works for me.
Well, but I mean, all these things, but he is clearly a successful working actor of the last like 10, 15 years, but
with many roles behind, not just like one-off roles, like series and franchises.
His role in Thor is kind of not that.
That's the weakest one, but he has Luther and he has Stringer Bell. I mean, those are.
Well, I do. Interestingly, I think Luther probably makes the strongest case. That would be kind of like the Remington Steele because that's a very popular British show. Mm-hmm. So like in that realm, everyone's very aware of Luther. But The Wire is weird because even though he's great on The Wire, that's a big cast. That's an ensemble.
Yeah, fair. Yeah.
Whereas Luther, I'm like, yes, that is like Remington Steele. He is literally that guy. Like, and it's his whole show. So I'm like, yeah, I see the comparison, but I don't know. I still think it's a really good idea. A little tiny tangent, but if you're okay with James Bond being recast, because that's how we've grown up for the last 50 years, that's just the way it is, would you be okay with James Bond? I'm assuming that you don't care if James Bond is, black, Indian, Asian, but I'm assuming you want him to be a guy and you want him to be somewhat European or British, because technically isn't Sean Connery, he's Scottish, right?
Connery's Scottish. Lazenby's from is Australian.
Like if you told me
Dalton's from Wales, I mean, Brosnan's right, Irish. None of them are all. Not, there's only two English Bonds, Craig and Moore.
Right, but I don't know if I would want has there ever been an American? I don't think so.
James Bond, no.
Yeah, because I don't know if I'd want Will Smith to be James Bond. I'd be like, that feels weird. Like, unless he can pull it off, I don't like. And the other thing was, would you be okay with James Bond changing genders? Could 007, the code 007, be like Jamie Bond or whatever? Would you be okay with that?
It wouldn't work for what they're trying to do, I don't think. I mean, that's why you. That's where it gets that tricky thing where it's like, well, just change the. Don't make it Bond anymore. Make it what it is. Don't. This gets into the Ghostbusters thing too eventually also, but I mean it's a matter of it seems like if you're making that kind of thing happen, it seems like it's more of like, look what we're doing, as opposed to doing something because it felt like the right thing to do or because it naturally went that way.
Well, yes, I guess to me
it feels like we're holding it. And I mean, that gets back to Fantastic Four as well. What I like about having Mike B. Jordan be Johnny Storm and having Kate Mara be Susan Storm is that it's they didn't try to make both of them black. They didn't try to make some statement where, like, Fox is like, look what we did. We have two black people as the Storms. Isn't that amazing? Look how great and progressive we are. They said instead, it's like, look, we got great actors. Period. Anyone else wants to talk about it, they can talk about it. But you know what we did? We got great actors. Doesn't matter what color they are. Doesn't matter that they're supposed to be brother and sister, but one of them's black, one of them's white. Guess what? Things like that happen. Like, there's no greater argument being made there. It's just, here's what happened. This is what we did. Whereas, look at female Ghostbusters, which we'll get to again, where I don't have a problem with that. That is no issue for me. But it seems like everything that I'm reading about it right now, which is not just coming from people online, but just from, you know, the directors and the former stars of Ghostbusters or whatever, they're saying, look how great this is that we're in a world where we can get female Ghostbusters. And it's like, why even bring up, like, the notion of progress and change shouldn't be about announcing how great it is that you're able to do something like that. It should just be able to do something without having to make some kind of statement out of it.
Well, okay, I have not... Well, wait. Do you want to talk about Ghostbusters, or do we want to
talk about whatever? I'm sorry. I'm going all over the place.
Well,
now.
I feel like with the Ghostbusters thing, I have a lot of opinions on that. With the Ghostbusters thing, okay, I have not read what you just. I've read a lot of people, the internet complaining. Yeah. I have not heard. Is it Paul Feig? Is that
yes,
how you
Paul
say
Feig,
the guy's
yes.
name?
Yeah.
I have not heard him say what you just said. Maybe he did. I have not heard that.
Not in those kind of words, but I mean,
I've heard that he said he's excited about working with this dream team. Cast or whatever. I've heard that, and they are all women. I feel like my Ghostbusters thing is somewhat like my Indiana Jones thing. It's kind of twofold. One, unlike Indiana Jones, I don't think that I'm pretty confident that the Ghostbusters are not the same characters. It's basically just this is the universe of Ghostbusters, and they're just new Ghostbusters. I don't think like one is going to be Patricia Vinkman. I don't think so, right? I don't think that's what they're doing.
They're rebooting it. It is a reboot. It is a hard reset of the Ghostbusters universe,
right?
Which is what bugs me around it.
So actually, I kind of agree. That would have been nice if they had actually not done a reboot and just done an extension of like, yeah. Well, this is 20 years later, and here are more Ghostbusters.
Exactly. It feels like that's a universe that's so full of possibilities because ghosts exist, and there's a team of people that take them down. It doesn't seem like you need to start that over again. It just seems like you can handle it as a kind of business as usual type universe. It's like, oh, here we go. Here's the new recruits, that kind of thing. I remember that's what it was going to be for a while.
I feel like on the positive end, I feel like Amy Poehler and Tina Fey and probably somewhat when they were in Saturday Night Live, them being in Saturday Night Live and then where we are now with Saturday Night Live has done a really good job of like highlighting a lot of female comedians and some, I mean, honestly, pretty much most of the best things I like on Saturday Night Live in the last few years are pretty much all the women characters. It's not really – so I don't think that it's that much of a surprise that like women in comedy, movies, and television have become like very popular. Like I feel like that's pretty much the way it's been for a while now, which is good. The only criticism I have with Ghostbusters – as the cast they've assembled, even though I like all of them, is I'm not I feel like it would have been a little more, as you would say, out of the box to maybe give me a female comedian like maybe Aubrey Plaza. Like, do they all have to basically be SNL people, except for, I guess, Melissa McCarthy? Like, I guess that feels a little too samey. Like, I guess I would like a little more stuff where it's like, oh, well, we picked this actress – and you're like, oh, well, she's funny, but that's kind of interesting. Whereas this, it does feel a little too much like these are SNL people, I guess, even though I like them. But that's my only thing, whereas it feels a little like SNL meets Ghostbusters.
It would bother me if this was like a Universal movie, but it is a Sony thing. So it's not like I feel like it was a matter of who auditioned for what, how things worked out. And that's the way it is, as opposed to like they purposely culled from just this group of people. I feel like it's more if they put a number of people together. And again, we have no idea; we're just speculating. But I mean, I think it's a matter of there was additions that took place. They put different groups of people together, and this is probably what they wound up as the best thing. It happens that there are a number of people that are you know coming from the same place in terms of who's popular in comedy right now, and so they can cull from certain areas And that's how it ended up being. So, I mean, Liz McCarthy, she's been in Paul Feig's last three movies at this point. I mean, that's not surprising whatsoever. Kristen Wiig, I mean, that was, I feel like everyone knew that, like, going in, it seems, at this point. And then, yeah, I mean, you have Kate McKinnon.
And
Leslie Jones. I mean, yeah, like, Leslie Jones is obviously, she's, like, rising in status, given that she's, like, she was a writer, now she's on Saturday Night Live all the time. Kate McKinnon's been on Saturday Night Live. Like, yeah, they're all, a lot of them are coming from the same similar backgrounds.
And I like, don't get me wrong, I like Kate McKinnon on SNL. I like her Ellen and her Justin Bieber and like other characters. But in a lot of ways, I kind of feel like Kate McKinnon is basically their Saturday Night Live's, she's basically another version of Kristen Wiig. Like, and I don't get me wrong, I like them both, but I am a little like, wasn't she basically, doesn't the skits that she does on SNL, like, in those kind of the roles that Kristen Wiig would have done. I guess that's what I mean by like variety, where I'm kind of like, well, you basically,
that's fair. Yeah. And if I had some kind of say in this, I'd try to coal my mind and think of like who I could think would best play whatever roles are being, you know, needed here or whatnot. But I mean, it's kind of like, it's just kind of in a wait and see at this point, cause it's already happened. And like, it's hard to
know. Now, I got to ask you, what do you think of the two Ghostbusters films?
Listeners should know, we actually did a full Ghostbusters podcast because when the original came out on that kind of 4K remaster, I love the first Ghostbusters. I think it's one of my favorite movies ever. It's one of my favorite comedies ever. Ghostbusters 2, it's fine. Like, it is what it is. I don't dislike the movie. I think it has a number of really good moments in it. I think it has some strong elements in terms of the like adding Peter McNichol to the cast and the general ghost mayhem that happens with the slime and Vigo stuff. I think the end goes a little overboard with the Statue of Liberty thing, but I mean, for the most part, I think it's fine. I would have wished if there was going to be another Ghostbusters, that would have happened a lot sooner rather than, you know, now. But
well, see, like, okay, I feel, and this could be, and if you ever do a podcast, I would love to do this. I feel like there are like, because I'm okay, so I'm 45, so I saw Ghostbusters in theaters, like I saw it like as a teenager or whatever. I feel like there's this weird thing, and don't get me wrong, like maybe I've done this too, or I would have if DVD and VHS had been had fallen in sync with my growing up in a different way, but I feel like there's a bunch of movies from the 80s and 90s that everybody who's about 10 years younger than me that are like in their 30s, like really revere. And I'm kind of like, these movies are okay. I'm like, they're good. I'm like, but they're not like Ghostbusters. And don't get me wrong, I would agree with you that, of course, I love the casting and there's a lot of really good moments in Ghostbusters. But Ghostbusters to me is not Back to the Future. Back to the Future is like perfect scripts, perfect casting, great editing. Like that's like an A+ great 80s movie. Ghostbusters, it's kind of shoddily shot.
Robert Zemeckis is a better director than Ivan Reitman. I can give
you that. That's true. Yeah, I mean, there's that.
And, I mean, but for me, it'd be splitting hairs in terms of those two movies specifically. But
I guess I feel like another one would be like Goonies. Like, it's okay. And like people are like, oh my God, Goonies is great.
So I'm like, yeah, I get behind you on that. And I'm a guy that hates Hook. And I'm like,
Hook is terrible.
I'm in that like age set where like everyone else I know loves Hook. but I can't stand it.
I mean, yes, of all the movies we're talking about, Ghostbusters is definitely the best of these ones that I feel have somehow become bigger than they are. Yes,
yeah, but I mean, it's not like Ghostbusters was a cult hit. I mean, it was a huge hit when it came
out. Oh, totally. No, you know what though? But even though it was a huge hit, you know, you're right. It was a huge hit. But remember, Bill Murray only did it because he wanted to do, which admittedly I've never seen this movie,
the
but
Edge movie or
yeah, that's what, that was the reason he did
it. But he still did it. And he still made an iconic character that people quote and love.
and remember when Ghostbusters came out, critically, it was kind of mixed. I mean, I don't remember. I think on Siskel and Ebert, I think one liked it, one didn't. But I remember.
Ebert loves Ghostbusters.
I remember it being a kind of a deal that like some critics were kind of like, well, the idea of taking that kind of like crazy, you know, 70s, 80s Saturday Night Live mayhem and mixing it with a big budget special effects movie doesn't really work. Like that was kind of the criticism at the time. And now it's kind of just understood. Everyone's just like, oh, it's just genius. And I'm like, well, I don't. I mean, part of that might be that we as critics now are more born from a lot more like you know, sci-fi and comedy and things that we like, whereas the critics in 84 who were an older guard that we're looking at, they might just have been like, I don't really like this stuff. Like, that's certainly possible, and that might have been why the reviews were.
I think you're overstating a little bit what you think the critical consensus back in the day for Ghostbusters was. I do think it was well regarded for what it did.
I mean, there was no Rotten Tomatoes, but I don't know. I remember thinking it was just like, it was. I'm not saying it was hated. It wasn't.
I know that, but I'm pretty sure it was given the good regard that it got back then, just as well. More so than Stripes. I feel like Stripes was the more mixed bag back then.
Oh, actually, strangely, I'm actually more of a fan of Stripes. I actually really like Stripes.
I really love the first half of Stripes.
Well, actually, I was
which
actually,
like, I really love the first half of Full Metal Jacket.
Well, I was actually about to say that's actually my problem with, I think, Ivan Reitman things, although what you just mentioned is Kubrick, but that's actually my problem with Ghostbusters. I think Ghostbusters and Stripes, which are both Reitman movies, because he did Stripes, right?
Yes, but that's what I like about Ghostbusters. It's more consistent in my eyes. It has an actual plot. Stripes is more like, let's goof around for half the movie, then let's engage into a plot next half.
You are right about that, but I feel that the plot contrivances of the last act of Ghostbusters,
the supernatural comedy about catching ghosts.
Yes, okay. it starts to wear out its welcome. I see what you're saying about in Stripes. It's even less plotty. It's just kind of like, now they've just run out of ideas. So I would agree with you there. But they both for me as a viewer, I'm kind of like, I'm like, you're kind of like losing your steam or whatever. And that's why I wonder if it's an Ivan Reitman thing. Me personally. Did Ivan Reitman do that Ashton Kutcher, Natalie Portman movie?
Yes.
Which, to be fair, that is not him in his prime. But I mean,
he hasn't been in his prime in a very long time.
Yeah, I know. So, well,
his last great movie was Dave in 93. Because after that, you get Junior, Father's Day, 6 Days, 7 Nights, Evolution, which was de facto Ghostbusters 3, My Super Ex-Girlfriend, No Strings Attached, and Draft Day.
Oh, I didn't see Draft Day. How was that?
I don't like that. But I mean, you get Meatball, Stripes, Ghostbusters, Twins, Ghostbusters 2, Kindergarten Cop, which is good, and Dave is really good.
But I think if we're gonna close the book somewhat on the Ghostbusters thing, I'm optimistic because I do like the cast and I like Paul Feig. I think the Heat is massively underrated, which is weird. I can't argue.
I don't know how you say that when it like made so much money, and I was in the camp of didn't liking it.
Wait, well, so yeah, okay, you're right. You're right. Actually, the Heat was a big hit. I guess it just feels like, you know, that's the weird thing about social media is that you're right. The Heat made a lot of money, and they wanted
it did to, well critically. I was in the minority of not liking it.
But I guess I feel like anytime, I mean, especially right now with Ghostbusters, when people are talking about why they don't like the new Ghostbusters reboot. One, it's their criticism of an all-women cast. And then the other thing is they don't like the director. And they usually cite Heat. They don't cite Bridesmaids because pretty much everyone likes Bridesmaids. So, like, they're going to be like, oh, the Heat was terrible. And I'm like, terrible? I was like, what? I didn't think it was terrible. Like, I mean, I think the Heat is probably the best of this, like, resurgence buddy cop, like, ride along Let's Be Cops. I think it's the best of those. I mean, maybe you disagree, but you might be saying, well, that's a shallow pool, but I mean, like, I don't know, I think Heat is more,
but I mean, I just don't think there's been many good ones at all recently.
Well, right.
Years.
Well, I think Heat is a solid 3-star movie that's eminently watchable, and that's all it's really trying to be. It's not a great plot or anything. It's just basically two characters, it moves along well, you know.
I agree that these things try to happen. I don't agree that they're, you know, good, but that's me.
Well, did you think Bullock and McCarthy had good chemistry together?
Yes, but I think that comes with the that's like that biopic argument. It's like, yeah, sure, they gave a great performance, but I mean, that doesn't mean I have to like the movie. I just didn't find
funny.
It is.
Okay, beyond, because I mean, obviously Ghostbusters is the next thing. If Paul Feig announced after Ghostbusters that his next movie was going to be teaming up Sandra Bullock and Melissa McCarthy again, not for a sequel, but like basically just kind of like, you know, Steve Martin and Eddie Murphy, or, you know, just where you get these actors that kind of do movies together.
Well, that's like what I want more. I talked about that when he talked about like Horrible Bosses 2, where you get these funny people And it's like, why not just that? That's what Ivan Reitman was doing back in the day. It's not like they, I mean, Ghostbusters 2 is like an anomaly essentially, but it's not like he got Stripes 2 and, you know, Animal House 2 and all these things, or
right.
Caddyshack 2, or there was a Caddyshack 2, but again, it's a different cat. It was more, these are funny people, let's keep putting them in different things. And I like that. And that's why I like a lot of these Apatow movies, where they're like, let's just keep putting them in these funny things, as opposed to like milking this like well that's really dry. It's like, how much more horrible bosses are we supposed to, like, how much more can we do with that? Like, I don't understand.
That's a good point. No, actually, you're right. You know, I didn't think of that. Seth Rogen, he does do that. I have to give him credit for that. Yeah.
Same with Will Ferrell. I mean, take out Anchorman 2. Everyone is like, it's just like them and all these funny people that they're associated with. They all do these different movies, and people see those movies because they like those people, not because it's another version of that same story. Quality aside, I mean, it's not, you didn't see Ricky Bobby 2. You didn't see Step Brothers 2. It took a hell of a long time to make Anchorman 2, and that's just because, like, okay, let's do it.
True.
But yeah, so in terms of, like, if you wanted to pair Bullock and McCarthy back together again, people seem to like that. So yeah, do that. You don't need to make Heat 2.
Totally agree.
All right, but I also just haven't been a fan of McCarthy in these movies lately. Basically everything after Bridesmaids. I really just have not. I've liked her in St. Vincent, but that's just, she's more dialed down in that role. Seeing that trailer for Spy, where she's, you know, a spy with, like, Jason Statham and, who is it? Jude Law. And she just kind of like falls down and goes boom, and it's like, all right, that's another one of those.
Wait, is that Wild Card?
Spy.
Well, it's actually called Spy. Okay, yeah. I haven't seen that. I haven't seen the trailer. Yeah. Well, how was St. Vincent?
It's good. I mean, it's fine. Like it's a Bill Murray movie, but I mean, she's in it, but she doesn't play like a wild character. She just plays a straight laced single mother.
Wait, so are you saying?
I'm saying that movie is negligible in terms of kind of the big Melissa McCarthy comedy movies that have been coming out in recent years. I have not been a fan of those.
Right. So, but that's what I'm saying. Does that mean you actually like her more in St. Vincent, where she's not doing her shtick?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. No, I was just wondering.
I don't know about more. It's just more of the ones that I've seen I haven't liked.
I mean,
of her doing that shtick.
Did you? Okay. Wait. Did you like Melissa McCarthy in Bridesmaids? Did you like Bridesmaids?
Yeah, but she's a supporting character in that. It's not like me seeing her constantly nonstop doing the same thing.
I mean, I would say I think The Heat is the best of her movies that where she's a starring role. I certainly like it more than what was the last? Was Tammy
There's
the last
Tammy,
one?
And then there is Identity Thief was before that.
Right. And I was okay with Identity Thief. It was kind of like a remake of Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
I never wanted to see it because that trailer it killed me inside every time I saw it.
Okay, I'll say this. I thought Identity Thief was way more tolerable, which isn't really a compliment, but tolerable than what was that bad one? Another one where it was like Robert Downey Jr. and Zach Galifianakis are crossing.
Due Date.
That was terrible. Like, so I thought Identity Thief was better than that. But obviously I think Planes, Trains, and Automobiles is way better than either of those. And then Tammy was actually more of a drama than a comedy, which actually I didn't mind, but
that's the portion that I liked. It felt it was a hybrid of ideas and it didn't overall work, but at the same time it tried something, which is why I could appreciate her in that movie a little bit more.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I mean, the scene where she holds up the fast food thing is actually, which is what they plastered everywhere and the stills, that's actually not a huge part of the movie. It's it is, but I think plot-wise it is, but like that's really not indicative of the movie. But I don't know. I really like her in Heat. I think her and Bullock were really, I don't know, I thought it really worked in Heat. Like, I don't know. The other thing too is that I will say that I think Melissa McCarthy is, even though, yes, look, I mean, she's getting paid. You know, she does have a shtick, which is like, you know, the loud, obnoxious female or whatever. But there's something about the way Melissa McCarthy does it for me that I feel she has a warmth and a vulnerability that somebody like Chris Farley, who in his day was the big, loud, obnoxious guy, I thought he didn't have that. Like, I mean, I think Chris Farley, most of his movies are pretty terrible. Like maybe it was because he was on drugs or whatever, but I mean, like, or maybe it was that, you know, Lorne Michaels, who produced a lot of those movies, was just kind of cheap. But Like,
I think it's a combination of those things, and yeah, yeah, like, I mean, the record, like, I, Tommy Boy's like, it's a fun movie, but I wouldn't say it's like a great movie. It's one that
but I like Tommy Boy.
But it's more, I think it comes, I think, like, nostalgia and certain aspects of the chemistry between him and Spade come into play over over considering, you know, the actual quality of the story that's written,
but yeah, so
and the quality of the film that's made, and you know what.
So I guess it just, to me, I guess I feel like when we're talking about the criticisms of Melissa McCarthy and her doing what she does. While I agree to some level, I think you're totally valid on that. I just feel like it's still a big step up compared to what I would say. Again, if we were to say a Chris Farley was that he was fulfilling that role, I think she's way better. Like, you know, and again, it could be also the confidence that they have in those kind of movies now. There could be like tons of different factors, but whatever the factors is, the actual output, like the result, I think is a better product.
And I think there's a lot of people that agree with you on that.
So, well, see, I don't know. I feel like people really love, because people love Tommy Boy, which again, I do like Tommy Boy. I feel like people, you bring up Chris Farley, they're always like, oh, he's a comic genius. And I'm always
I also think that comes with, you know, yeah, again, like this kind of nostalgic love for something, and as well as, you know, the age that we're in where not everyone could get their voice out there on something back then and want to do it because of the way that the generation has trained them to do. Whereas here, you're always going to get naysayers and you'll get a lot of love as well. But it's, the opinions, it's a much more vocal area today. And so when something does stand out, it does stand out, and you can recognize that more. It,
absolutely, absolutely. But, I mean, either way, I think we're getting a little off track with our...
I like this, this is fun.
I don't want to become the ultimate defender of Melissa McCarthy or something. I just, you know, I like her, but I'm not like, I don't want it to be like, wow, that guy's really nuts about Melissa McCarthy. Like, oh, not that, like, but, so... But wait, so what else is in news? Oh, Star Wars, right?
Got Star Wars stuff, yeah.
So what was the news on Star Wars?
There's a few things here, I believe. Tatiana Maslany, she's like of Orphan Black fame. She's currently, I don't know if it's official yet, but it seems like she's like the head, the person that's like in most contention for being like the lead of the first Star Wars spinoff that's supposed to be coming out, which we have no real details about. There's also stuff about the way these trilogies are going to line up where you have, or, you know, these new films are going to line up where you're going to have 7, 8, 9, that's going to be its own trilogy and then more to go with that. And then just like rumors about what the various spinoff movies will be in between these episode movies, whether they'll be with the old characters, like Boba Fett is like the big rumor right now, along with like young Han Solo, things like that. So it's just more of like speculation about what's going to be happening, given that this year is the first year where we'll be basically seeing a Star Wars movie every year. So,
well, okay, first of all, two things. One thing I want to ask is, because I don't know where you read this, because and I'm not denying, I just I don't know yeah. read this, but for quite a while now, when Disney announced they were doing a new Star Wars movie, they announced it as Star Wars Episode 7. But then when the actual trailer came out, it doesn't say Episode 7. It just says Star Wars: The Force Awakens. So when we started hearing about the spinoffs, I started thinking, well, maybe actually they're not going to do the number thing. Are they going to do the number? Because, I mean, if they are, why doesn't it say Star Wars 7? You know, why does it say Star Wars Episode 7? So I'm wondering if basically the Star Wars movie every year, they're just going to do that, and then they're not necessarily going to make them into a trilogy. Do you think it's going to be a trilogy?
There's a yes and a no to this. In terms of there being numbers assigned to them, I think it's more of like a, well, that's why the word spin-off comes into play. There are episodes, but it's not as if like Empire came out and was called Episode 5. I mean, it's more of just it's more of the knowledge among the people that know Star Wars. And given that, you know, a large majority of the world that watches movies know Star Wars, they understand that this is Episode 7. They just don't necessarily need to refer to it as such.
So you're saying that's really more of a prequel thing, because you're right.
I think it's a more of an associate. It's more of like a way to distance itself from the prequel. Because
you're
aspect.
Right. You're right. The original Star Wars movies, it was Star Wars: Return of the Jedi. It was only in the scroll. It would say Episode 5.
Exactly.
Oh, okay.
And I think that's the exact logic they're using for these new ones. In terms of the spinoffs, it might be like Star Wars: colon, you know, whatever.
The other thing was that Tatiana how do you say her last name?
Maslany.
Maslany, yeah. I think that's great. She's awesome.
I don't know about a young Boba Fett or a young Han Solo, only because I don't have a problem with recasting Harrison Ford, but that means you're doing movies in the past?
Yeah.
I would feel that, because remember, with all these Marvel movies, which I'm assuming Disney is using as their outline, like their success with Marvel is what they're hoping to do with Star Wars, they all take place in a universe that's happening right now. So if you suddenly do a Star Wars movie, Force Awakens, and the next year you do a weird flashback movie, that might be weird. Because now it's like, oh, that's not really all in the same... I don't know. I think that's kind of weird. I don't know if I would like that.
I mean, it might be, but at the same time, I feel like there's enough confidence in what Disney plans to do with, you know, this giant franchise that it won't be too much of an issue. I feel like there'll be enough done to establish what needs to happen, I guess, to make it work.
You know what? I just realized I'm wrong, because Captain America was a period piece.
Yeah.
So I was, you know, so that, what? And Thor, technically.
Oh, that's all over the place.
Yeah, that's just kind of all over the place. You know what, actually, I think it'd be cooler if, I like the idea of a 7, 8, 9 that is one coherent story. That's great.
Which is what it should be, yes.
Yeah, totally cool. I think, I don't know, I almost wonder if it would be more interesting to do a Guardians of the Galaxy thing spinoff instead of doing this is our Han Solo movie. Although I'm assuming they'll do that because brand-wise, it makes more sense to be like, well, here's a movie about Yoda or whatever.
That's what I understand, yeah.
Yeah, but it might be cool if you did a Star Wars spinoff that wasn't really a character as much as it was like, you know, maybe just a different part of the Star Wars universe, a different world, a different, like, that might be kind of cool. Like, that, I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, it's just more curiosity. Like, I don't necessarily need to have more backstory stuff. I'd rather just kind of keep it all. I'd rather be random, if anything. Like, pick and choose whatever time period in the Star Wars universe you'd like, but just have it be about some character you never heard of before. Yeah, like, kind of do like a Rosencrantz Guildenstern kind of thing. Just like various characters that might have interacted in some way with the timelines that we know, but just have them be on their own adventure.
I totally agree. Let me ask you, though. As much as you like to talk about being surprised and all that kind of stuff, I am assuming,
yeah,
I'm assuming we'll get the full story trailer for Star Wars. Is that going to be in front of the Avengers? I would think
that'd be my assumption. Yeah.
So because that's basically like
there's no reason not to do that. Let's put it that
way. That's May, and then the movie comes out in December. That feels about right. Yeah. Like now, let me ask you. Because I'm a huge Star Wars fan. So I love all the Star Wars movies, the prequels. I love all of them.
I do too.
But now for you, especially as being a movie critic, there is a weird thing where, like, you brought up the Babadook. Yeah. I didn't know too much about the Babadook. Mm-hmm. I heard a little, like, it's this kind of monster fairy tale maybe type of thing.
Yeah.
And that's my favorite way to see movies. But when you're talking about big, huge movies, it's kind of impossible. It's just like you can't really not... So are you looking forward to seeing the Star Wars trailer, but are you trying to not know too much when you go into the movie?
Abe and I have talked about this a lot because he avoids trailers. He doesn't like seeing trailers, even though we have a segment devoted to trailers. But he doesn't like, specifically for a lot of things, but like these big tent poles where they have multiple trailers and you feel like you've seen everything. I'm a person that does not focus on that when I actually see the movie. I tend to, regardless of what I've seen in advance, with some minor exceptions, I'm not one that focuses on, well, that happened there, so apparently this is what has to happen in the film at some point, and I should think about that the whole way through. That's not a thing that I go through. I love the art of a trailer. I love seeing how that plays, and while I don't necessarily need to see 4 Avengers trailers, because guess what? I'm going to see the Avengers. I like seeing what they do with them. I like seeing the use of music, how they cut certain scenes together. With all that in mind, I will watch any Star Wars trailer that comes my way, but that comes from my confidence in the studio's confidence that they know what they're trying to sell and how to sell it. And some studios do that better than others. I feel like Warner Brothers does an amazing job of marketing their movies. Look at Godzilla. That had an amazing marketing campaign, regardless of what you thought of the movie. I really liked it, but I think that marketing campaign for Godzilla was incredible. I would argue the same for a lot of the Batman movies as well.
American Sniper had a really good part.
Of course, yeah. And I think this first Star Wars one had a great trailer. It tells you almost nothing, but you're just, right. I want to see this. I need to do this right now. So with that in mind, I love watching these big tentpole trailers. I love seeing them for the first time. I love getting what I need to know, but I also have this kind of reliance on a marketing company knowing what to show me and how to not spoil me in that
You know, that's it. You know what I just realized? I wonder if I have a friend of mine who she does a television podcast, and she doesn't really like movie trailers that much. In fact, when the Star Wars trailer came out, she was very much just like, she's like, come on, it's over a year away. She's like, I don't care. She's like, it's a year away. Why do I, you know, this is a waste. And I was just thinking, I wonder if trailers, and like you just said, and I liked that you said the art of trailers, is very much a cinema thing, because like before it was on, you know, our Apple TVs or whatever, it's basically Super Bowl commercials. And of course, when you go to see a movie in the theater, you see a big trailer. TV doesn't really do that. Like, yes, they did just come out with a Game of Thrones trailer. That's true. But like in general, television is more just kind of like, you know, oh, there's a new season of The House of Cards. Okay, I'll start watching. Like, I don't really need to see a trailer. Like, it doesn't occur to me to do that. There's a few things where they'll be like, on the next episode of, you know, whatever. But you're right. Movie trailers, they have a sense of, like, scale. And, like, they have a sense of, like, really trying to, like, you know, hopefully be creative. I mean, it's funny you and I have brought up Nolan. I would actually say one of the bane of existence of trailers in the last couple of years has been ever since Inception, it feels like every trailer has to try to copy that, blah, like that noise or whatever. And it becomes,
And that's the thing that goes with most, any kind of big trailer that sets up a standard of how to do something, a lot of trailers follow that. That's movies in general. I mean, what works once has to work another 75,000 times.
Right? But I love that. I mean, it's funny. I thought that the Avengers trailer was terrific. I loved the Pinocchio theme, and I love him, you know, there are no strings on me. I was like, whoa. But then they came off with a new Avengers trailer that didn't really add anything and felt really irrelevant. So I felt like, why does this trailer even exist? There's like nothing. I'm like, I guess there's more Hulk fighting the Iron Man suit thing, but I'm like, there's not. It was weird. I was just
It is weird, but it's this thing where it's like, do we really need to know that Avengers is coming out? I feel like people kind of know. But at the same time, what I like about this Avengers marketing more than the original, the first Avengers movie marketing, is that it doesn't feel like it's ruining any shot for me. Whereas the first Avengers trailer has that shot of Hulk catching Iron Man. That's the end of the movie. I mean, like,
true. Although
I don't feel like I
was really excited. I was like, oh my god, that looks awesome.
Yeah, it looks awesome. At the same time, I feel like you could cut an awesome trailer of Avengers without showing me that shot.
Yeah.
So because I'm watching Avengers, and this is one of those times where it's like a trailer did inform me of something that was going to happen. When Tony Stark's falling out of the sky, I guess what? I know Hulk's going to catch him because I saw that trailer 80,000 times. So it's like, all right, well, there goes that.
That's true.
There goes a payoff of what seems to be a good climax for a movie.
Well, I mean, I've heard so many interesting theories about the Star Wars teaser, and one of them that I thought I'm hoping is somewhat true is that the majority of that trailer or teaser is basically only like maybe like the first 20 minutes of the movie. Because if you look at a lot of the background, it looks like, except maybe not the Oscar Isaac stuff, but a lot of it looks like it's basically on Tatooine. Yeah, so it's really just one setting. And I was like, well, that's kind of interesting if they cut a trailer from really just the first. And actually, I think Hunger Games, the first Hunger Games trailer, they showed you everything that sets up the Hunger Games, same and they didn't fire. Actually show you the game.
Same with Catching Fire.
Yeah.
I mean, those ones all do a great job of doing it. I think they've done a good job with that series in general in terms of how to market those movies. But in terms of like first act editing type stuff, that's what happens when you have J.J. Abrams or Christopher Nolan or David Fincher even. They're all involved in that process as well. Like, they're not handing it off to another thing. Whereas Spider-Man, the Amazing Spider-Man movies, that's like they get this kind of rough assemble of a movie and they ship it all over to whoever edits those trailers, and they edit a bunch of things. And that's why you get certain lines and arcs that you think are going to happen that don't end up happening because the movie's not done yet, because they're trying so hard to like figure out what the movie is.
Right, and they don't
spend enough time thinking how to market that movie, so they market everything, and people end up hating it more for the marketing rather than the actual movie.
Exactly.
Which puts things in an awkward position, whereas I like The Amazing Spider-Man 2. It has problems, it has flaws, but I feel like the majority of the criticism came from the fact that it exists and that the way it was like being made into such a big deal based out of marketing rather than actually analyzing the movie itself. Which is where things can run into problems. I mean, I feel like Star Wars is trying to do its best to lay low, but it's Star Wars, so it's hard for it to, you know.
I mean,
try
and
to
actually,
do that.
Just because this is kind of a special edition podcast, because there isn't like big movies come out. I would also say that I was really impressed that Fast and Furious trailer, or the one that I saw, the one that debuted a few months ago.
Yeah.
They did a little moment where I think they say something about family and they cut to Paul Walker, but in general, they pretty much did what they always do, which is we're going to show you a really cool stunt, which is usually the first half of the movie. And that's basically what it was. And I was like, oh, that's great. So they kind of did that too, which was really tricky because for them, I was like, you've got an actor that died who's like one of the main characters. You could really play that up. And they didn't really. I didn't think they did.
No, I figured they did a fine job of selling another Fast and Furious movie, regardless of what's going on behind the scenes. And I feel like it's doing so, to call back to Fantastic Four, it's doing so without making some kind of statement. It's not trying to say, look what we did. We got this movie, this guy died, but guess what? We still have the movie and support us for that reason. It's just saying, here's an action movie. In the same way that they're like, look, we have Michael B. Jordan. It's a good actor. Nothing else goes with that.
So just curious, I don't know, you know, if you, I think you, you know, as a, both friends of Scott Mendelson, who writes for Forbes, the big box office guy, do you think that Star Wars is going to be the biggest box office of all time the weekend? And then having said that, do you think that Fast and Furious and Avengers will be still within like spitting distance?
I think in terms of the year, sure. I think there's other, I mean,
You
have the last Hunger Games movie as well, which I think also, you know, will do gangbusters.
But Sam, it's weird because this Hunger Games didn't do as well.
Yeah, but it's the first part.
But it's weird because the other two Hunger Games were like over 400 million and this one's like 335,
which is nothing to sneeze at all.
No, that's true. I mean, it's still a lot of money.
I do think knowing that something's the final chapter easily leads into something bigger.
I mean, technically
for this kind of, yeah, we can go into the Hobbit thing, but I feel like those movies aren't, you know, loved either. I feel like it's been a pretty general
excitement. You think Hunger Games 4, you think will be like Deathly Hallows Part 2?
I feel it will play that way.
Okay, I can see that.
Yeah. Without doing any, being asked offhand, yes, I think so.
Do you think Fast and Furious? I don't know. There's a weird part of me that thinks that when Fast and Furious opens in April, because it's April, there's like nothing else out or whatever. I have a weird feeling that it wouldn't surprise me. I don't think it would beat Avengers because that's like 200 million, but it wouldn't surprise me if it's like 150. Because I think the curiosity is really high on that.
I think it's a to put the, not to put this in any kind of other way, but it's an added bonus that there is a curiosity now. It was already going to do really well because these Fast and Furious movies, these last three in particular, have done really well, and so this one was more than likely going to do really well as well. But now,
and you've got Jason Statham as the bad guy, and
it's like going back to Dark Knight. I mean, Dark Knight was going to do well, but the added curiosity of Keith Ledger, who, you know, died before it came out, that made it into this kind of global phenomenon. And I don't think Furious 7 is going to necessarily be a global phenomenon, but I think it's going to make a ton of money.
I would agree. Yeah. I got to say though. Yeah, I'm really wondering if Avengers will be able to maintain what, because remember, I mean, the first Avengers making 200 million is just so far beyond like what anything, even Disney did not expect numbers like that. I do wonder if Age of Ultron could do that, but I'm pretty confident that Star Wars can. Assuming that the next Star Wars trailer is awesome, and in the world we live in now, unlike the world of the prequels, there will be advance word. Remember when the prequels came out, because it was George Lucas, there were barely any screenings and like there weren't a lot of reviews, and Rotten Tomatoes and stuff was pretty early, you know, especially 1999.
Yeah.
We don't live in that world anymore. And so assuming J.J. Abrams knocks it out of the park, and then it's like 80, it's at least 85% or whatever at Rotten Tomatoes, I'm pretty confident that Star Wars will be the biggest. We'll top the Avengers.
Well, I mean, it is one of the biggest, you know, things out there in general.
Yes.
So yeah, I don't have much doubt. I mean, movies are literally moving away from Star Wars to give it room to do what it needs to do.
I can't believe Mission Impossible. Not only that they did that, but that basically their movies will be finished 5 months early. That's so weird to me.
That gives me so much confidence in a series that I already love. I really like those movies for the movie.
I'm like, wow, they're really confident.
So it's like that's a huge sign of positive. That's like that's a win-win in a lot of ways, whereas it can presumably make the money it wants to make as well as be the success they want it to be, because they're confident enough to say, let's not push it to next year, let's push it to earlier this year. So unless there's some kind of like huge rush and it's just this like sloppy thing, and which I entirely doubt, because say what you will about Tom Cruise, the man wants to make a good movie for audiences, and that's what he's going to be doing.
I'm a big Tom Cruise fan. So yes, I'm very, and actually ironic earlier when you were talking about Warner Brothers, that I would say is the only misstep that I think Edge of Tomorrow making $100 million was actually because of word of mouth. But yeah. I think that if they had marketed it better, I think it could have done even bit better.
Yeah, and I think it's just, at the end of the day with that, I think it's just a difficult movie to market. I feel like maybe they put too much effort into the other ones to do a stronger job with that. But at the same time, I do think it's hard to market both the fun and the stakes at the same time, which is what they seem to be trying to do. If you look at those trailers, you see the different ways they're trying to balance the fun that's had in that movie with, you know, the war that's taking place. I mean, they're in a difficult position to make that work. Whereas Godzilla, I think the use of ominous monster threats really paid off for that movie in terms of getting it a strong opening weekend.
Yes, I know. I would totally agree. I thought that I agree. Well, so what else do we have in news?
I want to wrap up, actually. We've been talking a lot and I've been really enjoying this.
Oh, okay. Cool.
I think we've given the listeners just enough.
Honestly, the biggest thing that we're excited about is Ouija 2.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's the takeaway from all of this. All right, before you, that's so much better. We've been talking straight. This will be very easy to edit because there's almost no gaps between the two of us. Before we wrap up, we got some things here. We have Out Now Presents What's Out Now. These are movies that are coming out on Blu-ray and DVD this week. And we have quite a few things here. We have John Wick, which I think is awesome.
Yeah.
Dracula Untold, which is
not
better,
awesome.
Better unseen.
Yes, Untold and Unseen would be better. Yes, agreed.
There's Ouija, which comes out now. I don't tend to brag about the reviews that I write or like the titles I give them, but I was proud of this one. My title for Ouija, my Ouija review was Ouija Bored to Death, which I thought
good.
I think that pretty much summed it up. Then we have Dear White People, which is really good.
How is that?
It's really good. It's in my top 15. I really love that movie quite a bit.
I want to see it.
We have The Disappearance of Eleanor Rigby, which I saw this week. I saw the him/her version. Have you seen the Disappearance of Eleanor Rigby?
No, but is that like, it's like 4 hours, right?
It's the Jessica Chastain, James McAvoy film that was originally in its like film festival cut. It was divided as him/her, so there are two different movies that played back to back, and it's looking at this relationship from like from the her perspective and the him perspective, and then Weinstein got their hands on it, and they're like, all right, let's put it together. So they made a conversion called Them, which, as opposed to having two 90-minute movies, they had one 2-hour movie.
Which is better to do?
Well, I only watched him/her in full. I've sampled them just to see what it was like, to see that kind of edit. And I'd say the him/her is, I mean, that's the more complete film. I mean, you're seeing if you look at them, you miss about like 70 minutes of movie, and it like really diminishes the roles of certain actors. Like, I know like Viola Davis is featured heavily in her, but you'd see like her like in the background once in him. So it's like little things like that where you take away the nuances and things that, you know, having these actors add in a whole movie versus having this little edit of it. So I'd recommend the him/her version.
Okay, cool. Is Nightcrawler also this week?
That's next week.
Okay, because we got the Blu-ray, so that's why, in which I love that movie, that's next week.
For sure, yeah. But okay. Yeah, that's what's coming out this week on DVD, Blu-ray, and streaming. See, next week. Next week's show, we have the SpongeBob movie, : Sponge Out of Water, we have Seventh Son, and we have Jupiter Ascending. We're going to talk about Jupiter Ascending, so that's what's going to be the plan for that week. I know there's, you know, unless there's like a serious uproar for Seventh Son love, or there's enough people that want to support me and my choice to want to talk about the SpongeBob movie, it looks like Jupiter's Ascending is probably what we're going to talk about next week.
I missed the SpongeBob. Did you hear that Jupiter's Ascending, they screened it at Sundance?
Yeah, that was the secret screening at Sundance for some reason. They thought Jupiter Ascending seems like the movie that a bunch of old film critics and various hipsters want to go see right now. Let's take a break from, you know, some indie dramas that are, you know, completely different and have a big sci-fi spectacle. That makes sense. That will probably get the warmest reception.
Yeah, because I heard some people walked out and I was like, uh-oh. But I mean, I'm excited.
I've said many times that I've loved everything the Wachowskis have done. I'm a huge fan of the Wachowskis. I've loved all the Matrix sequels. I love the Speed Racer.
What do you think? What is their best film?
Their best film?
Still Bound?
I think the first two Matrix movies. I like Reloaded a little bit more than the first Matrix.
But you know, I don't know. I think Bound is. I mean,
it's a really good movie.
Kind of,
yeah, no
Bound's
doubt.
Kind of like their Memento, where it's just like it's a really good tight genre.
It's a solid neo noir. Yes, I agree. But I mean, it's not one where I think it's their best because of that. Where I do like Memento the most of Nolan's movies, splitting hairs with Dark Knight and some other things maybe.
But, what do you think their weakest is?
Revolutions. Matrix, the third Matrix movie.
Yeah. Yes, I think Speed Racer is way underrated.
I love Speed Racer. I got Speed Racer is this wonderful just candy machine.
I'm really mixed on, and I didn't read the book Cloud Atlas, but I was really
was
mixed.
Yeah, but it's not.
I was mixed on the movie. There's some stuff that's great, and other stuff that I was like, eh, like so. But I'm very excited. This, I mean, Jupiter's Ascending looks like their wheelhouse. And actually, before this podcast ends, I feel like Jupiter's Ascending is a weird one where the first trailer they made when it was supposed to open in August, I was kind of not very excited about. But the new trailer they made, which is now before it opens, which is kind of showing the story more,
yeah.
I'm way more like, oh, this looks really good. I'm totally into this. Like,
I agree. And also, it's new. Like, this isn't a book. It's not a comic. It's not a video game. It's just something new. And I like that. And I'd like that to be supported. That's what I like to see.
No, I totally agree, too. Absolutely. So,
even if it's not, you know, the pivotal work of storytelling of the year, it's going to be a visual feast. And the Wachowskis, regardless of, you know, your thoughts on their writing abilities, they know how to direct action. And I'm looking forward to that a lot.
Actually, you know, it's really weird you say that. Actually, one of the things I think they're really good at that they don't get enough credit for. No, you're right. Their action scenes are fantastic. Mm-hmm. Because one of the times someone said this about the Matrix movies, and which is really weird. I think it's true. But for some reason, I think it works. Is that, what is that old adage? It's, what is it? Show, don't tell.
Yeah.
The Matrix movies, especially the first one, a good chunk of the first 40 minutes, all it is Morpheus telling.
Yeah.
Really, that's all he's doing is talking. Mm-hmm. That shouldn't work. Like, that should be like, ugh, this is lame. But they actually, I think, are very good in giving us a whole bunch of information and making it interesting.
I very much agree, and that's why I like Reloaded so much.
Yeah, no, and I would agree. I love Reloaded, but I feel like when we talk about their action scenes, of course, yeah, their action scenes are great, and they work with great fight, you know, with Wu Ping and everything, great. But I feel that they don't get enough credit for like, they have a lot of information dumps that they have to do on the audience, and mm-hmm. a lot of the times it's actually pretty engaging. A lot of other movies would be awful.
And a lot of times it's so, like done yeah. in sync with what's happening. Like, it's not a matter of like, sometimes it's, as opposed to a lot of movies, they're like, here's the plan, let's set up the plan, here's 20 minutes of the plan, now let's do the plan. They have movies where they're saying the plan as they're doing the action, so you're already past the like setup part.
True, that's true.
It's going hand in hand in a lot of ways.
I would agree. So, yeah. Yes, I hope Jupiter's Ascending.
I want it to be good.
More excited about that than finally seeing Mr. Gray.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so. So with all that said, Peter, where can people find more of your work online?
Yes, I do write for Variware, Topless Robot. I mostly do video games, although I am planning on doing a Why Shawshank Redemption Sucks article for Topless Robot. I cannot wait to do that. And who else do I write for? Oh, and Crave. Crave, I also do mostly video game reviews.
All right. Yeah,
Crave Online.
Okay. You can find me at thecodeyzeke.com. That's where I find I write my written movie reviews, as well as at ysblue.com for my written movie reviews, as well as Blu-ray reviews there. You can follow me on Twitter at AaronsPS4. And I also write about TV over at theyoungfolks.com. You can find all the other episodes about Now, Theron, and Abe on iTunes, Stitcher, Podomatic, SoundCloud, pretty much anywhere you can find a podcast.
Cool.
You can email us at outnowpodcast@gmail.com. Let us know your thoughts on any of the topics that we discussed today. There's also our Tumblr page, outnowpodcast.tumblr.com, our Facebook page, facebook.com/outnowpodcast, our Twitter, twitter.com/outnowpodcast. Pretty much everything's outnowpodcast. And there's, you know, you guys who listen to this enough, you know where you can find us, and you know how accessible we are on the Twitter sphere and the Facebooks and what have you. Peter, thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you. No, thanks for having me. That was a lot of fun.
For sure. And hopefully Abe get well soon should be our hashtag this week. And I'm sure he'll be just fine. He'll be right as rain probably minutes after I end this podcast. We'll see. But yeah. So with all that said, until next time, so long and goodbye.
Later. Yeah,